It's time for Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Mat-Su Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky.
Well, folks, it's once again time for another edition of Valley Edition. It's my great pleasure to be sitting in the sun, not in Palmer, Alaska, but in Anchorage, while three people sit there ready to be the panel today. Mark Kelsey, welcome, Mark.
Good morning, Mike.
And Terry Snyder, welcome, Terry.
Morning, Mike.
And Zaz Hollander, welcome, Zaz.
Hi, Mike.
So this has been an interesting week, and I'm going to start off by saying that last night, yesterday, there were two events that happened, both over in Wasilla, that have some portent for the future. The first one was a transportation fair, and I'm wondering if any of our panelists managed to get over to that in at the Monard Center.
I did not. I had no transportation.
Okay. Zaz?
Awesome. I was writing about a different transportation issue, the borough reminding the public that they can't access the rail grade, the unfinished rail grade from Houston to the port.
Okay.
Oh, for cars?
And that leaves Terry.
Nope, you got a big zero here. Sorry, Mike. I didn't make it either. I was coming back from Girdwood.
Okay, you were transporting yourself back from Girdwood. Well, I don't have a lot of detail on it, but I think Saz's point here, maybe we could start with that, because we did have earlier this week a Palmer City Council meeting that had some discussion about transportation as well. Zaz, just a quick summary of what you're covering.
Oh, sure. So I actually picked up on this via Facebook chatter that there were some people up in the Houston Big Lake area complaining about a security guard who apparently represents the borough, who was telling them they were trespassing when they were, as usual, ignoring the no trespassing signs along the railroad. So this is the 32-mile rail extension from the port to the Parks Highway, and it never got enough funding. There's $185 million sunk in that rail. Another $125 million is needed to finish it. So for now, it is unfinished. People call it abandoned, but the borough hates that term. They say it's not abandoned. We're still working out there. We're clearing and surveying. But the public considers it an abandoned multi-million, hundreds of million dollars of public money spent that they should be able to use. And the borough is reminding them, because there have been a series of vandalisms against the gates and the locks, especially on the port end. And local property owners are reporting some increase in property crimes and thefts and littering and hunting on their property. And so the borough is saying, hey, folks, you can't go here, and putting locks up and closing gates that locals tell me have not been closed before.
And is there actual...
Okay. Go ahead.
Is there a rail bed there? Or is it just
there is. It's beautiful. I looked at it, and my first thought was, boy, it'd be great to run or ride a bike on that.
Well, and I think people have used it for biking and hiking and dog walking and that sort of thing.
Yeah, they have, and they you can drive a regular vehicle on it. And so you can drive for miles. The whole thing is there's about 25 miles of railroad grade embankment, and then there's a 7-mile gap of no embankment at Point McKenzie where the money ran out. But there's only like 1.8 mile of track.
So it sounds like a gravel road, basically.
Yeah.
So does it help people access their properties by using that?
I didn't. It may well. I didn't talk to anybody. I think there are some concerns that it's helping people they don't want on their property.
Yeah.
But I don't live out there, but yeah. I'm getting the sense that there are a lot of people who use it. And not legally, because they are trespassing, but it the quote-unquote right way just to go hunting where they can hunt legally. And, it overlaps the Big Lake Trail system.
Yeah. Yeah, I kind of got an idea from living out in Big Lake, because if you wanted to get to Port McKenzie, you had to go all the way in basically to Wasilla, and then, or now I guess you go KGB. You can go up to Vine in that way. But that would be a lot shorter for most people that lived on that west end, probably. And it's unfortunate that it can't be used for a road or for good purposes while we're waiting around for $125 million in funding. At least it would have some purpose, but yeah. That's always a big thing out in the Big Lake area. I have a property out there that doesn't have road access, and I know people that don't want road access because they think that keeps people away from their properties. But having said that, I've had several break-ins not having road property or road access. So I'm not sure that's a complete deterrent. What's a deterrent is more people being around, more lighting, more interaction of people. So, but yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how that plays itself out.
Well, I think maybe instructive from your discussions, Haas, is that while there's been a lot of focus on highway construction, transportation, even bike trails and other trails, ski or multi-use trails, there are still these other issues associated with Alaska's situation with being both a well-developed area and also a very rural area. I know that I alluded to a reference at the last Palmer City Council meeting to a transportation issue. One there was sparked by a presentation from DOT about the upcoming work associated with the Glen Highway. And it was interesting that after 10 years of discussion, all kinds of public hearings and the rest about it, there was still concern being raised that as proposed, the well-known Palmer Y, where you come in if you're going north and you have a choice to continue on the highway or where the MEA substation is, you can branch off into Palmer, that will not be as easy a off-ramp for people traveling. There'll be a light there and it'll be difficult. And the council spent some time talking about how the members had heard there was concern about that. Any comments?
Yeah, we talked about this yesterday, Mike, a little bit, citizen lobbyist talk, and I think that there are people that this is kind of the way these projects go. They percolate around for years and years and years. There's some talk about them at fairs and that sort of thing, but nobody really pays attention to the design of them so much until the dirt is about ready to be turned, and then people start losing their minds because people start talking about it. And DOT digs in and says, hey, where have you been for 10 years? And this is all the money we have, and this is the plan, and this is what we're going to do. And then you start, is that a fair assessment of what happens on these things?
I think so, yeah. The long time, no public involvement, just because it's sort of percolating just below most people's radar. Mm-hmm. And by the time DOT goes 10 years into something, they're pretty far into their engineering and design.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. I'd like to segue then to another topic. I didn't make it to the transportation fair because I was attending and actually streaming and recording an event sponsored by the Alaska Center. And this was a Matsu Community Candidate Forum that was held in the very beautiful, relatively new Wasilla Library. Went over there, and there were five individuals. There were three people that are running for the borough assembly, including Ted Leonard, Dan Mayfield, and Patricia Hogan. And then there were two people who were running for the Palmer City Council, Sabrina Combs and Kenny Linden. The interesting focus, if you know anything about the Alaska Center, was a look at fisheries and in particular salmon. I did record that session. I might mention that it's up on Radio Free Palmer's website, so you can listen to the discussion. It was moderated by Mark Masteller, and there were probably about 20 people there in attendance. It was instructive because I have not heard the candidates so focused since the questions revolved around everything from relationship between commercial and sports fisheries, but particularly the role of salmon. And it was also interesting to see that not all candidates for these various positions attended, but that the two candidates for the city council were able to speak pretty persuasively, I think, about the role salmon has, even if you don't happen to be in a community that's sitting alongside a fishery. Yeah. Zaz, you've covered some of this in the past. Any comments?
Well, I think that for local officials, sometimes the frustration is the lack of direct impact they can have on fisheries policies in Alaska that tend to be set by either the Board of Fisheries or, you know, federal groups. So it's interesting that the local folks had their say.
Right.
Well, it certainly affects Mayfield's district up there. His opponent wasn't there. Is that right? Just Mayfield?
Just Mayfield. Hmm. Right. Those were the only three, Ted Leonard, Dan Mayfield, and Patricia Hogan. And you could see that there was something of a different focus. Obviously, those people that were Palmer were saying, well, the Matanuska River isn't a heavily fished river, but they spoke to something maybe more important, that not only was the salmon an important part of their lives, and they knew people or people in their family that were either commercial fishermen, fished the sports area, or in one way or another were involved or had been involved, having worked in fisheries, et cetera, in the past. And what I think emerged was how widespread is the whole fisheries and the economy that comes derived from fishing and the use of salmon. And that was very, very interesting, I think. In light of a couple of suggestions in particular, I think it was probably Dan Mayfield and Ted Leonard and suggested that in particular it would be important, if you're going to have an impact upon fisheries, to be focused on the governor. And I bring that up because the Alaska Dispatch News recently had a fairly lengthy critical article in the commentary section by Rick Steiner that made a whole list of things that suggested that the governor was not very supportive of a balanced approach to development of fisheries. Any of you see that or have a sense of Mr. Steiner's criticism?
I didn't see it. I know from, you know, past statements he's made, you know, he speaks for a lot of people, for sure. And you might even argue that he's speaking for people who don't, whose voice typically is not heavily factored into the equation and the final outcomes. But it doesn't change, you know, fish wars have been going on here forever, and it just seems like theme and variation to me.
So does he speak for the sports fishermen or the subsistence fishermen or the commercial fishermen? Or there's kind of all a bunch of different groups that sort of overlap, right?
Yeah, I think the sense I had from the assembly candidates that at the present time there seems to be, as they have observed and the actions of various committees and groups, that the governor has not balanced those two interests of sport versus commercial, and that there's a belief that most of the decisions that are being made are in support of commercial, to the detriment, in particular, of escapement issues associated with the Mat-Su Valley. Mm-hmm. So just saying that that was a group that was faced with asking questions focused on a topic which at first might seem to be only one of a whole series, maybe not the big topic, but as you would listen, you began to realize that salmon and the whole issue around fishing is a big deal. And it might not be one that is prominent in discussions when you're looking at something like the larger budget issues, but it's there. So moving on to another topic, we know that in October, Sarah Heath was in. She's the director of the governor's office in Palmer, and she spoke a little bit about the upcoming special session in October that's been called to focus on a revision to Senate Bill 91, which had been passed in order to make some changes in criminal justice procedures. And there are some significant proposals there. I might also point again to the same Alaska Dispatch news set of articles. This one by Representative George Rauscher, who represents a portion of the Valley. And his suggestion was that the crime bill should be the sole focus of this October special session. I know recently there's been floated a suggestion that a tax, an income tax, a rate of, I believe, 1.5% would be appropriate as a way of closing the fiscal gap. Any comments about that upcoming special election, a session rather?
Yeah, that's not surprising. He's part of the group of legislators that have pushed back pretty hard since he took that seat, and not wanting to do anything to repair the economy, not even to really want to have the conversation about any type of additional revenue. So it doesn't surprise me. That's sort of been the position of a lot of that, the minority, at least in the House, of we're just going to wait this out, that either oil's going to come back or some magic unicorn dust is going to be sprinkled across the state. And they've kind of dug in and opposed the governor, any measure the governor has brought to them about that. So it doesn't surprise me. The crime bill is what got some of them elected and what could take some of them out that voted for it. So it's more important to them because really at the end of the day, it's about the next election, which is in 2018.
Okay.
It's true. But on the hopeful side, and I am not hopeful that this side will prevail, but the governor has certainly given folks cover in the legislature.
Yep.
By putting a specific proposal on the table. So with an election upcoming, you know, it could
backfire.
Ease some folks into the yes column, you know, giving them the ability after the fact to blame the governor.
Either that or not have to face constituents that are asking the question why they didn't do anything. I mean, there's some of that. We're seeing that. We're going to see that with the national level with the health care bill. Why didn't you do anything we asked you to do on both sides, whether they wanted them to, you know. So it could. It's always about the next election. That's just the easiest assumption.
Well,
Zoss, do you have anything to add?
Go ahead, Zoss.
I just wanted to say that the whole SB 91, boy, it's become a really easy excuse for a lot of very mm-hmm. complicated problems. And there are issues with that bill, for sure. But mm-hmm. it's also, there are so many other issues at play. Bail scheduling guidelines that came out roughly around the same time that are
cutting prosecutors.
Of the same mind. But, yeah, for sure, budget cuts to troopers,
mm-hmm.
to prosecutors. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a judge shortage. You know, the DAs aren't trying a lot of cases. And there is a revolving door, but it's not entirely or maybe even in large part due to SB 91, although there were some significant changes made.
Yeah, yeah, that's okay. Going to be a really interesting one to watch how it plays out. You're seeing a lot of the professionals, people that actually have worked within the changes coming out and saying, give it time.
And that's just really hard for the public to hear when they're
being
seeing
affected.
More property crime.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. Well, since we've covered I've referenced two articles that have appeared in the Alaska Dispatch News, I'm going to do one more. This is by Charles Wolforth. And he spent a fairly long piece going through the state's fiscal gap. And he started out by suggesting that he had been in touch with someone who was fearful of disaster from the state fiscal gap. And as he went through, he said he thought he had a fairly convincing case that we were in quite as bad a situation as was suggested. In part, it did not absolve the legislature from taking action, but he narrowed the actual gap down to a few hundred million dollars rather than multiple billions of dollars. And
couch money, really. I mean, hardly anything.
Well, I guess it's all relative. Basically saying the legislature's already cut the dividend by more than half. And basically, he was of the opinion that you couldn't cut your way further, that somewhere along the way a few hundred million dollars needed to be raised. It could not be cut, and that was the focus and the importance of conveying to the legislature that don't talk about $2.5 billion, et cetera. just really come down to what apparently the governor has suggested. Here's a way of focusing on one way of raising that money to complete the process. What's your level of fear?
Fear that they won't do anything, or fear that of the economy?
Fear that the legislature will not do it, and this continued budget problem will lead to a disaster for the state of Alaska.
Ooh.
How's that?
Are we using a scale of 1 to 10? What are we?
Yeah, sure. How about 1 to 10? That sounds like a proper range. What's your level of fear? 10 being the world is about to end, and 1 being...
That was last Saturday. We've missed that deadline.
Let's start with Mark. Mark, what do you think?
I would put it at a wishy-washy 6 for now. I think history tells us for sure that it's more likely the case that they won't do anything. On the other hand, they're running out of time. Something definitely needs to be done. There is a mindset among some for sure that we don't need to do it right now, and maybe we don't. I don't know, but so I'll park myself at a 6 for now. It seems a safe place to be.
Okay, Zaz.
Well, I'm not in the business of putting my own opinions out on disaster, but my sense is that people, Alaskans, are simultaneously complaining about crime and whether it's SB 91 related or not, and complaining about their dividend checks being cut and not wanting to pay taxes. So it's a hard state to legislate in. But yeah, let's just say the odds aren't high that there's going to be a drastic action.
Okay, Terry.
Well, I'm not optimistic that anything's going to happen either, because I think it takes another election cycle to have a few more towel snaps this wake people up to actually believe they have to do their job. And I just don't think, I think time's running out for that to happen. And I think there's too many people running for governor. And instead of going in, and it's sort of the struggle again, we're seeing national trying to craft a bipartisan health care bill. Nobody really wants blood on their hands. They've been given a horrible situation that they've somewhat self-made on both sides to some degree, but everybody's afraid to have their name on the final thing. And so I'm not optimistic that they're going to make the changes, because I just, again, think it's too much about the next election. I'd say as far as the economy goes, we have a culture of waiting around for the next big thing of a oil spill, or we're kind of based on that feeling that some big thing will come up that'll sort of boost the economy. And I think there's a lot of those people around. There's a lot of for sale signs out there. There's a lot of people that have left, but housing prices haven't really gone down yet. And people, the right people, haven't tried to sell their house and come up empty. The foreclosures are starting to come up. But all those delayed reactions to not having capital projects in the shoot, which we're getting less and less all the time, we're just not feeling that yet enough every day. So there's a lot of grumbling, but until people feel the pain, I just don't see them, really pushing to have much happen. I'd go as much as say 7. I'd probably take a 7 on the scale that we're in pretty deep problems.
Okay. Well, you've referenced the healthcare action or inaction in the Congress. And it's interesting that although there was a lot of focus, particularly on our senior senator from Alaska, Lisa Murkowski, she didn't have to say what she was going to do because the vote didn't happen. Others stepped forward, and led by Senator John McCain. And the latest attempt to repeal the Affordable Care Act has gone away. Any comments about the way the two senators, Dan Sullivan and Lisa Murkowski, handled things?
I'll take the first stab at this. I personally did not see a whole lot of Dan Sullivan on this issue. I think his position was clear. He was going to back what the party wanted. It was interesting for me to watch her. I guess when all was said and done, I was not surprised. It seemed to me to be sort of a cop-out, but I understand the political times and the pressure she's under, especially with, you know, folks in her own party here. I think the real bottom line here, and we're starting to hear it and see evidence of it, is there's a real need, and I think a growing understanding of this in Washington, that the only way to craft a fix that works well for everyone is to do it together. So let's just hope that we see more bipartisan effort to fix what's broken instead of just the political game to scrap what we don't like.
I agree. Mark covered it really well. She didn't have to. I know that upsets some people that she didn't come out like the main senator did, but she didn't have to. They were counting votes too. Everybody can count votes. I think there are a lot of people that are criticizing her about that right now, and that's okay, but let's wait till the next vote, because this isn't over. This has been it's very clear she's going to have lots of opportunities to make hard, hard decisions. She made one in July, but she was kind of forced to. This one, the numbers weren't there to really force her to do that. I see that on the state level all the time, that people just say, yeah, my vote's not going to make a difference one way or the other, so why should I put myself out there? That's just politics, and it's disturbing because everybody wants them people to vote their convictions at the end of the day, but it hardly happens. That's just the truth of the matter.
Okay. Zaz, any last comment?
Oh, my colleagues here covered everything I would possibly say.
Okay. Well, I want to thank the panelists today as we come to the end of another edition of Valley Edition. Thank you, Mark Kelsey.
Always good to be here.
Thank you, Zaz Hollander.
Thanks, Mike. Enjoy the sun.
And thank you, Terry Snyder.
Don't be greedy. Send the sun this way.
I will do that. And thank you, Carrie Bowling, for running the board today. We'll be back next week for another edition of Valley Edition.
You've been listening to Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Matsu Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky. Valley Edition is a production of Radio Free Palmer, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska. The views and opinions of hosts or guests do not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, this station, or its underwriters. If you have any comments or questions about this program, email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.